Chapter 10, Mark 1:2.00.00. Ventanus of the Fourth, says Ventanus, please stand by as we verify your code authority and identity. Ventanus lowers the speaker horn and waits until Ceramica relays a confirmation from the server. Ventanus again, he says. It's good to hear your voice, Chapter Master. And yours, Ventanus. The reply crackles back, tonally altered by the signalling crypt. We were blind until a few moments ago. We thought the surface was dead. Not quite, sir, Ventanus replies. But I can't pretend the picture is good. Our losses have been severe. We have spent the hour since the attack trying to re-establish a voxnet and regain some data capacity. In the next few minutes, I will begin passing to you details of surviving surface strengths and their positions as they come to me. We have the Mechanicum server here, and she is processing the inload for us. Ventanus, can you restore the weapons grid? The vox crackles. Is the server able to do that? The enemy has control of it and is using it to obliterate the fleet. We cannot hope to achieve anything in the face of their grid control. Stand by, replies Ventanus. I believe the cogitation power of this data engine is insufficient, but the server is examining the issue. I'm going to talk with her now. Data should be in loading to you. Captain Sidance will remain on the link for further voice contact. Gage, acknowledged. Ventanus hands the speaker horn to Sidance and walks back into the stack room with Ceramica. There is a tranquil but dead look on Torin's face, as if her body is empty, as if her mind has fled deep into remote subetheric reaches and left the physical shell behind. Vox contact has now been made with 67 survivor groups, Ceramica tells him, including 2 engine squadrons in North Erod, an armour company near the Bay of Lisco, and the 14th Garnide Heavy Infantry, who survived virtually intact at a bunker complex in Silator Province. Keep compiling. The Primarch will coordinate the active practical. The Chapter Master responded from the flagship, observes Ceramica, not your Primarch. Have you discussed the orbital losses yet?
What do you mean?
Orbital losses are extreme, and they're increasing every minute as the grid hunts new targets. Is your Primarch still alive? Is an active practical even possible?
Ventanus glares at her. Can I speak to the server? He asks.
She is in deep interface.
And I appreciate her efforts, but I need to talk to her.
Ceramica nods. She issues a gentle binaric signal.
Torin opens her eyes.
Captain?
She nods, an underlying tremulous carrier signal clicking along behind her voice. Our priority is the weapons grid, server. What progress have you made?
I can confirm, she says calmly, that this engine is not capable of either overriding control of the grid or of managing the grid's operation after an override. It is simply not powerful enough.
Is there an alternative?
I am attempting to decide that, she replies. So far, there does not appear to be a single functioning data engine on Kalth rated sufficient for the job that is not also infected with the enemy scrap code. For a definitive answer, however, you must wait until my final determination.
How long will that take? Asks Ventanus.
I do not know, Captain, she replies.
Ventanus hears footsteps behind him and looks around. Celaton stands in the doorway.
You'd better come, sir, he says.
Ventanus nods.
Inform me the moment you have an answer, he says to Torin, and exits.
Torin drifts back into the dataverse. Her serenity is practiced and deliberate. A server can manage far greater degrees of data manipulation whilst in a calm state of mind. In truth, she is fighting a core of anxiety. With the data engine active, she can see it all, or at least she can see more of the situation's totality than anyone except the enemy. She can see the truly frightening scale of the losses, the death toll, the crippling injury to the 13th Legion, the burning cities, the slaughtered populations, the devastated geography, and the systematic annihilation of the fleet. Under any other circumstances, Kalth would be considered a loss and the battle a defeat. The Ultramarines' characteristic determination is the only thing keeping them going, their fearless resolve to devise a new practical, to circumvent and outplay even hopeless odds. These are worse than hopeless odds. Torin can see that.
She has a simultaneous data view of the globe, and she can see that even the surviving loyalist forces are hard-pressed and dying, cornered, fighting off attack from all sides, slowly facing elimination. They are too scattered and too isolated. The enemy has superiority in every way. This is extinction. The grid might have made a difference, but there is no way of accessing or controlling it. This is extinction. This is the death of Kalth. This is the end of the 13th Legion. Mark 12.07.21.
I thought you needed to see this, says Celoton. He leads Ventanus outside onto the cratered lawns of the palace.
A prisoner? Ventanus asks dubiously. Most of the enemy fled after the fourth ripped into them. Many stood their ground and fought to the death. But this one has accepted capture. He is standing on the lawn by the broken fountain, guarded by four ultramarines. Ventanus leaves Celoton to his duties and approaches the word-bearer. The warrior's armor is dented and bloody. His face is smeared with gore. He looks at Ventanus and almost seems to smile.
Name, says Ventanus.
Morpal Zir, replies the word-bearer.
One of the guarding ultramarines shows Ventanus the weapons that the word-bearer was carrying when he was captured. A broken bolt gun, a large dagger made of black metal with a wire-wound handle. The dagger is curious. It looks ritualistic and ceremonial, less of a weapon and more of a totem of status.
Were you the ranking officer? Ventanus asks.
I was in command, Zir admits.
Any reason I shouldn't just kill you bastard? Ventanus asks.
Because you still live by a code, your imperial truth, your honour, your ethics.
All of which you have forgotten.
All of which we have specifically renounced, Zir corrects.
This is the old enmity? Asks Ventanus.
Zir laughs.
How typically arrogant, how characteristic of the Ultramar mindset. Yes, we slaked our dislike of you today, but that is not why we attacked Kalth.
Why then? Asks Ventanus.
The galaxy is at war, replies Zir. A war against the false emperor. We follow Horus.
Ventanus doesn't answer. It makes no sense, but the apparent senselessness must at least be set in the context of the day's unimaginable events. He takes another look at the ritual knife. It is ugly. Its shape and design make him uncomfortable. He believes that the Brotherhood cultists were carrying similar weapons. He slides it into his belt. He will show it to the server. Perhaps the data engine can provide some illuminating information.
So the galaxy is at war, he asks.
Yes.
A civil war?
The civil war, replies Zir, as though proud of it.
Warmaster Horus has turned against the Emperor?
Zir nods.
News takes time to travel, he says convivially. You will hear of it soon enough. Except you won't. None of you. None of the 13th. Accept the fact that you have just hours to live.
If you allowed yourself to become a captive just so you could try to threaten us, says Sullus, walking up to join them, then you are a fool.
I am not here to threaten you, says Zir. I would have preferred to have died, but I have a duty as commander. A duty to offer you terms.
Sullus draws his sword.
Give me permission to silence this traitor, he says.
Wait, replies Ventanus. He looks at the word-bearer. Zir's expression is scornful and confident.
He knows we won't hurt him while he is a captive, Sullus, Ventanus says.
He has mocked us for it. He has mocked our civilized code and principles. He taunts us for having humanitarian ethics. If that's the worst thing he can say, let him.
Sullus growls.
Seriously, Teos, says Ventanus, he thinks that's an insult, that we have moral standards and he does not.
Zir looks Ventanus in the eyes.
Your ethical stance is admirable, Captain, he says. Do not misunderstand me. We of the 17th admire you. We always have. There is much to be admired about the august ultramarines. Your resolve, your sense of duty, your loyalty especially. These comments are not intended to appear snide, Captain. I am being genuine. What you stand for and represent is anathema to us, and we have taken arms against it. We will not rest until it is dead and overthrown. That does not prevent us, all the while, from admiring the strength with which you champion it. Zia looks from Ventanus to Sullus, and then back again.
"You were everything we could not be," he says. "Then the truth was revealed to us, the primordial truth, and we realized that you were everything we should not be."
"His jabbering bores me," Sullus says to Ventanus.
"You are creatures of honor and reason," says Zia. "You understand terms. That is why I refrained from seizing a death I was happy to embrace and undertook this humiliation. I have come to offer you terms."
"You have 1 minute to express them," says Ventanus.
"In failing to take the palace and destroy you," Zia begins, "I have disappointed my field commander. Leptius Numinus was identified as a primary target. Do you understand what I'm saying, Captain? Just because you defeated my force, it will not prevent others from coming. At the time of my capture, Commander Fodral Fell was advancing on Leptius with his battle host. They can't be long away. Fell will crush you. You barely broke my force. His is 20 times the size, and he is not a creature of honor, Captain, not as you understand the principle. Surrender now. Surrender to me, and I will vouch on your behalf. You and your forces here, their lives will be spared."
"Spared for what?" asks Sullus. "A life spared under those terms is not a life I'd care for."
Zia nods.
"I understand. I anticipated as much. There can be no rapprochement between us. We have waded into blood too far."
"Then what did you expect?" asked Ventanus. "That we would surrender to you, side with you, with the 17th, with, if what you say is true, Horus, against Terror?"
"Of course not," replies Zia. "But I did, perhaps, expect that you might at least listen to our truth. It is not what you think, Captain. It is beautiful. Your understanding of the galaxy will change. A paradigm shift. You will wonder why you ever thought the things you think. You will wonder how and why they ever made any sense."
"Zia," says Ventanus, "I have listened to your terms and I have heard your offer. I formally reject both."
"But you will die," says Zia.
"Everyone dies," replies Ventanus, turning away.
"It will not be a good death," Zia calls after him. "There will be no glory in it. It will be a sad and miserable end."
"Even in glory, death is miserable," Ventanus replies.
"Fell will punish you. He will punish you in unimaginable ways. He will trample your flesh into the earth."
"Ignore him," Ventanus says to Sullus.
"Just like we did to your Primarch," Zia yells. "We will cut you and bleed you and kill you, like we cut and bled him. He begged for death in the end, pleaded for it, begged us like a coward. He wept. He pleaded for us to finish him, to end his pain. We just laughed and pissed on his heart, because we knew he was afraid."
Ventanus can't stop him. Sullus moves like a blur. Zia's torso is slashed open from the left hip to the throat in one ripping cut. The end of Sullus's sword embeds itself in the underside of Zia's jaw. Blood pours out of the word-bearer. He sways. Black blood floods from the wound, down his legs, back down the wedged blade, and up Sullus's arm. It streams from Zia's mouth. His mouth is half open. Ventanus can see the fine steel edge of the sword blade running between two of the lower teeth. Zia is laughing. He murmurs something, choking on blood, gagged by the sword. Ventanus pushes Sullus away and grasps the sword to wrench it out and deliver the mercy of a quick kill.
"Finally," Zia gurgles. "I wondered what it would take. I knew one of you would have the balls."
He begins to collapse, dropping to his knees before Ventanus can withdraw the sword. The blood pools around him on the dry earth, rolling out like a purple mirror in all directions. The four Ultramarines guards step back in quiet disapproval. Sullus is staring, cursing himself for letting his anger out. Something else is being let out too. Zia is laughing. The laughter throbs tidal surges of blood out of his mouth. It is thick. There are clots in it, shreds of tissue. The laughter is a gurgle, like a blocked storm drain. Zia divides along the line of the sword wound. He splits from the hip to the throat. Then his skull parts too in a vertical line like a pea pod dividing.
flesh tears and shreds apart like fibrous matter. The sword, unseated, falls onto the bloody earth. Zir is on his knees, opened from the waist like a bloody flower. He is still, somehow, laughing. Then he turns inside out. Ventanus, Sullus, and the guards recoil in dismay. Blood spatters them. Zir's backbone sprouts like a calcified tree trunk, growing weird branches that look as if they're composed of arm bones. His rib cage opens like skeletal wings. His organs pulse and grow, smearing tissue and sinew across the reshaping skeleton. Zir becomes a vessel. Whatever is hidden inside him, whatever is germinating and shooting through him from the warp, is much, much bigger than his physical form could have contained. Sprouting limbs turn black and scaly. They grow bristles and thorns. They stretch out like the legs of a giant arachnid. Scorpion tails twist and thrash like a nightmare wreath as they grow out of the open ribs. Stings glitter like knives. Zir's new head buds and unfolds, slowly turning up from a bowed stance. Mouth parts chatter. Huge multifaceted eyes twinkle and glitter, iridescent. Horns sprout from the cranium, the huge upright horns of some ancient Aegean bull demon. Zir is still laughing, but it is not Zir anymore. The air is full of blowflies like a storm of buzzing ash.
"Samus!" laughs Zir. "Samus is here!"